Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, October 5th, 2014. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate it and review it on iTunes and Stitcher. Tell people why you like it. All that good stuff. I would appreciate it. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at mundanefestival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. All right. It's Sunday. Football's about to come on. I got the Sports Center on mute. A lot of upsets this weekend. It started with that. Started with Oregon losing to Arizona, and I think now Mark Mariota is out of the Heisman race. So that makes things pretty interesting. I think this kid, Dax Prescott from Mississippi State, is probably one of the front runners, if not the front runner. It's going to be interesting, man. Like they beat, because Mississippi State beat Texas A&M, and that was a big upset. Ole Miss beat Alabama. Like that's crazy. Ole Miss beat Alabama yesterday. So Mississippi is winning. The South is rising. The South is rising. Confederacy. There's going to be like a lot of interracial sex going on in Mississippi. And there's probably going to be a lot of interracial babies. There's going to be a lot of biracial angels within the next, within the next 9 months. 9 to 10 months, they're going to come out and they will be the future, and they will eradicate all of the ignorance that is happening in everywhere. And they're going to be agents for change. Those biracial angels, those Derek Jeters and Mariah Careys in training, they're going to make things happen in this country. And it's not going to be just with singing or baseball. They're going to make things happen. I was, it's always interesting how, like, I mean, I'm really starting to come back around to the days of my youth as far as just really starting to enjoy. Okay, hold on. I'm really starting to enjoy, college football. And, it's starting to be more fun. Like yesterday, like I missed the Notre Dame. Like I think Notre Dame is my team this year, because I love Everett Golson. But I think so. So I'm starting to love college football again. And in college game day, they always do this. They always make you fall in love with a guy, because they tell you about his story. And that happened to me with yesterday with this kid, Dax Prescott. And I always want to say Dax Shepard, because he's the guy from Parenthood and the only other guy that I know named Dax on TV or whatever. This kid, a quarterback for Mississippi State, raised by a single mom. Single mom raised him and his two other brothers. And, you know, the other colleges that were recruiting him wanted to make him an athlete, like a defensive back. He wanted to be a quarterback, and his mom said, no, you're going to go to this school. You're going to be a quarterback, and you're going to follow your dream and all this stuff. Mom gets sick and dies of cancer. And, you know, Tom Rinaldi's doing the voiceover, and it's his piece about this kid. And it's just like all emotional. And it's like, how can you not root for this kid? You know, how can you not like just want this guy to win? And he's playing Texas A&M, and he's playing this kid, Kenny Football, they're calling him, or they call him like the Truth or some shit now. What are they calling this kid? His name is Kenny Hill. And I'm looking at, and so they beat Texas A&M, and so he's killing it now. But the Heisman update, now I just pause it. They've got Heisman update. So they've got Todd Gurley, whom I'm assuming is a running back. He had 163 rushing yards yesterday, 2 touchdowns. Marcus Mariota, 276 yards. So they got, all right, so they got Todd Gurley from Georgia, Marcus Mariota from Oregon, Amari Cooper from Alabama, Amir Abdullah from Nebraska, and Kenny Hill from Texas A&M. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those are the 5 guys. I don't see Dax anywhere. So I'm guessing they're just saying, you know, I think that's going to change. I think that's good because this Shepherd kid is coming. I think Golson is coming. And I think somebody might have mentioned a kid from Michigan State. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I'm beginning a love affair with college football now. I'm kind of upset that I missed like Notre Dame. They came back against Stanford. Like that was a really close game and I had to leave to go to a show, so I couldn't watch it all. So I'm starting to get that feeling back, guys. I want that old thing back. I'm really looking forward to just watching more football. I'm kind of getting a little bored. I don't know what's happening to me. I might be getting a little bored of the NFL. I'm not really bored of it. I still like the storylines and stuff, but it's just like the teams that I like aren't doing that great. Like Carolina's, like, it just doesn't seem like they just don't seem like a team. It don't seem like they did anything to improve that team. They got rid of Steve Smith because they didn't want to pay him. The O-line is suspect to me. Cam Newton's hurt. He can't do the things that he needs to do to be effective. RG3's hurt. Teddy Bridgewater didn't play last Thursday. I guess he's going to play next week. All my black quarterbacks are doing bad. EJ Manuel got benched. And I just had to come around to the fact that maybe he isn't that good. And I wanted to fight it. But when people you respect say that Chris, he's just... It's like, Chris, he's not a good quarterback. He's not. He's just not. But I think, isn't that just like, I think because of the success of some guys like Russell Wilson and the success that RG3 had a couple years ago, is it just everybody can't be that guy yet? But I just feel like some of these guys, like, they can't fail. It's just like that old, like Chris Rock always said, you know, we'll know that there's been progress with race when black people are allowed to fail like white people. You know, like I feel like that's going to be a watermark, a banner. That's I guess a watershed moment, you know, when we can do that. I think Donald Glover might have said something on an interview when he mentioned like Jaden Smith and Sasha and Malia and Seven, like Andre 3000 and Erykah Badu's kid, like they might be able to fail more so than people in my generation, you know, something along the lines of that. But basically, if you go back to that, my Chris Rock point, I think that's true. But yeah, like, when people that, you know, like he's just not a good quarterback. And then Geno Smith, you know, but there's not really a team. When you look at the Jets, who's on that team? Who's on that offense? And they're like bringing Michael Vick. Well, so Michael Vick can get his head taken off. I don't know. So yeah, I guess I am really enjoying college football more. So that's good. So this is episode 87 of the Mundane Festival podcast. 13 away, if my math is correct, from 100. That's pretty crazy, you guys. I'm going to call this episode Reggie Wayne. Episode Reggie Wayne of the Indianapolis Colts. Let's read some of his, let's read his bio, some of his achievements. Here we go. Reggie Wayne was born on November 17th, 1978 in New Orleans, Louisiana, standing at 6 feet, weighing in at 200 pounds, went to Marrero High School, Marrero Arrett High School in Louisiana, went to the U, the University of Miami, drafted in 2001, first round, pick number 30, played his entire career so far with the Indianapolis Colts. Career highlights and awards: Super Bowl champion, two-time AFC champion, six-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro, NFL receiving yards leader, 10,000 receiving yards club, All Big East team, Miami Hurricanes career receptions record, 173, University of Miami Hall of Fame. He was inducted in 2011. Career NFL statistics as of week four, 2014, 1,029 receptions, 13,873 receiving yards, 13.5 receiving yards per catch, 81 receiving touchdowns. There you go. Reggie Wayne, I would say future Hall of Famer, right? I mean, he's got the numbers. Fuck it. Future Hall of Famer, Reggie Wayne. All right. Episode 87. Episode Reggie Wayne. Let's do a couple of plugs. Why don't we plug some shows while I got you here? Let's do that. Let's say, here we go. October 8th, I'll be at the Hell's Kitchen Lounge in Newark, New Jersey at 9 p.m. October 14th, I'll be at Bear Burger in the East Village in New York City at 8 o'clock p.m. October 15th, I'll be at Levity Live in West Nyack, New York. I heard Gordon Baker Bone is on that show, so you know it's going to be fun. That's the NYC Pro Show. That's going to be a good time. This is a very special announcement. October 16th, 2014, at 10 o'clock p.m., I will be performing stand-up on television, on Access TV, on the Gotham Comedy Live Show. That's going to be on, if you have DirecTV, if you have the Dish Network, if you have Verizon Fios, you will be able to see me perform stand-up comedy live on television, that on Access TV. That's Mark Cuban's network, and I believe partially Ryan Seacrest, I think. But that's going to be great. Like, it's going to be fun. I'm very excited. It's my first time doing stand-up on TV, if you want to count the time that I was on closed circuit TV or just public access TV on the Staten Island comedy show. I was good for what I was back then. I hope that footage is no longer exists. This will be my first time doing stand up on television, and I'm very proud, very excited. It's validation that, you know, I didn't make the right, that I made the right decision to pursue this thing that I wanted to do ever since I was a kid. But it's only the beginning, folks. God willing, I think this might only be the beginning for your boy. Not to say I'm going to be super famous because I do this show, but it is something that I'm very proud of, and I want to be in the moment while I'm doing it, and I want to enjoy myself, and I hope that when you see it, you will see me doing that, and that I will not be bombing. And I think it's going to be fun. All right. So that's that. What I want to get into, just wanted to say the Derek Jeter stuff. I don't get why people, like, he's retired now. It's officially over. He played his last game on Sunday. I just don't get that, even with me living in the New York area, that how people were annoyed by this guy after 20 years of playing baseball, winning 5 championships, that people were like, oh, why is he having all these ceremonies and da-da-da-da. I'm annoyed that people are annoyed by Derek Jeter getting all these accolades. I don't care if he wasn't the best Yankee or the best shortstop or the best player in the world. He was a great player. He was a part of winning 5 championships. He did a lot for this city. He fucked a lot of girls and they were hot. And I think people were jealous because he hooked up with all these women that they couldn't get. And I think people need to back off. And who cares that, you know, somebody in San Diego wanted to give him a surfboard or whatever they gave him. One of these weird, odd gifts that you give a guy when he retires. It's a sign of respect. You know, this is like the end of an era. This is marks the end of a lot of people's childhoods, especially people that were fans of New York, of the New York Yankees and all of that good stuff. Right? Right, guys? I mean, you don't see that anymore. And I've talked about this on the show. Like, I grew up watching Cal Ripken in the Maryland, D.C. area playing, being the Iron Man, breaking Lou Gehrig's records. And it was great. Like, he was that stalwart guy. Actually, it was him and Daryl Green. Stayed with the team the whole career. And that meant something. If you want to talk about how sports, it means something, and the loyalty and the pomp and circumstance and blah, blah, blah. If you want to talk about sports in this high, lofty way that makes it religious to a lot of people, then you got to respect Jeter. If you're going to, because you don't see, it's, I don't know if we're ever going to see that again. One guy staying with the franchise for his whole career. You know, what's the guy from Minnesota? Morneau? Maybe he'll stay with Minnesota the whole time. But I don't know if you know, but I'm talking about, but like achieving things. I mean, Ripken, I think he might have won in his first year and never really won again. But people were saying the same thing about Cal Ripken. Like, of course, his skills were diminishing as he got older. And people saw they should take him out. I remember people saying that a lot. Man, he needs to sit his ass down. I think my dad might have said that one time. But, yeah, man, because you have to cherish those things. Because I realized when I was about 11 years old, and I think this might have been the time, I don't know if I was that self-aware at 11 or 12, but when I saw Joe Montana in a Kansas City Chiefs jersey, I was like, all right. I mean, because you grow up seeing this guy as a 49er for his whole career, and then for him to suddenly be playing with the Chiefs and like Ronnie Lott playing with the fucking Jets, it's weird seeing that. And that's when I knew, like, okay, like, these guys are expendable. Once they get ready, once they get done with you, you get traded. Or they don't think you can play anymore. Seeing Jerry Rice, the greatest, arguably the greatest football player ever, like to see him in a Seahawks jersey, let alone not just him going across the bay playing with the Raiders, but him playing with the Seahawks, like just to see that. And then you want to talk about loyalty like that. That's like you want to, like that's the main reason why I would never get mad. Like, I wasn't angry at LeBron, even, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little more evolved. No, I'm not going to say that I'm more evolved, but I just don't get caught up into teams like that anymore. It's kind of why I'm like kind of like a removed fan of sports. I just kind of like the storylines. I like to see a good game. I root for certain people, but I just like to see a game. I like to see people make plays and all that stuff. I'm just a fan of the games. But it's hard to get wrapped up into a team and really love a player when you know that the reason you like a player, a team, is because of a specific player. When that guy goes, my allegiance, for the most part, will go with that guy. You know, So I don't know. Props to Derek Jeter. If you want to get a real, really good retrospective of Derek Jeter, his career, just check out Jason Lawhead's podcast, Lawhead's Court. And he gives, it's a recent episode, maybe 1 or 2 weeks ago, where he talks about Jeter and what he meant to baseball, what he meant to the Yankees, and just the antithesis of what Keith Olbermann said about him on his show. So yeah, man, that's what's up. Jeter Retupact. Hashtag Retupact. I've replaced the S for a two. Like, you know, all that. All right. So, there was this, story that was circulating around Facebook about this white, the lesbian white mother that, she's filing this woman, a lesbian couple from Ohio has filed this wrongful birth lawsuit against a sperm bank 2 years after insemination, I believe, because the kid is 2 years old, and it's like, so this lesbian white couple out of Ohio, they filed this suit because they wanted a white baby. This kid is biracial. It's clearly they inseminated this woman with the sperm of an African, a black guy, and they can't return the kid. I mean, it's not a DVD player. You know, it's a kid. I agree. Like, okay, so I think this is malpractice. I think this is malpractice. I think they got a case. But the article that came out, the article's titled, it's from this website called identities.mic. And it's titled "White Mom's Lawsuit Over Black Baby Exposes Ugly Truths About White Privilege." Like, we didn't already know ugly truths about white privilege. When you add white and privilege together, that's already a negative connotation. That's already saying, like, there's probably going to be some trouble. There's probably going to be some ignorance. There's probably good. And I think instead of white privilege, I actually like a comedian Herbie Gill's word that he coined in Whitelment. It's white and entitlement together. And that adds a more of a, adds a better, adds more power to the punch. So there was a sperm, this, so that they get this kid. Jesus, hold on. So they wanted more sperm. Those dreams were dashed. And so let me read, I'm going to read this passage from, I guess this is a part of, this is from the Chicago Tribune. And they released part of the lawsuit. What is it? Medical malpractice is only a part of what the lawsuit is concerned with, as seen as in the documents made public by the Chicago Tribune. The filings paint a picture of a white couple's discomfort with the admitted steep learning curve, in quotations, they have had to overcome in terms of understanding black people, black culture, black experiences, and even how to deal with a black child's hair. Dun, dun, dun. All right, here we go. On August 21st, 2012, Jennifer gave birth to Peyton, a beautiful, obviously mixed-raced baby girl. Jennifer bonded with Peyton easily, and she and Amanda loved her very much. Even so, Jennifer lives each day with fears, anxieties, and uncertainty about her future and Peyton's future. Jennifer admits that she was raised around stereotypical attitudes about people other than those in her all-white environment. Family members, one uncle in particular, speaks openly and derisively about persons of color. She did not know African Americans until her college days at the University of Akron. Because of this background and upbringing, Jennifer acknowledges her limited cultural competency relative to African Americans and steep learning curve, particularly in small, homogenous Union Town, which she regards as too racially intolerant. As just one example, getting a young daughter's haircut is not particularly stressful for most mothers, but to Jennifer, it is a routine matter because Peyton has hair typical of an African American girl. To get a decent cut, Jennifer must travel to a black neighborhood far from where she lives, where she is obviously different in appearance and not overtly welcome. Guys, this, can you just picture, like, the mom, like, she's just like, Jennifer's just like, I mean, I almost had a nervous breakdown. I was looking at Peyton and I was just saying to her, like, what is happening with your hair? How do I deal with this? I mean, I don't know. And I had to take her down. I had to drive a half an hour away to a black neighborhood, and I had to get her, and on our way, there were all these liquor stores and carry out places, and there were churches, liquor stores. Like, how many churches and liquor stores do you need in one neighborhood? How many religions are there? I mean, and they looked at me and they just, basically, I had to go outside of my comfort zone and to get a haircut for my kid. I don't know, man. This is funny. It's interesting to me because I don't just see it like, I see the white privilege thing. And I hope my battery doesn't die. But I see the white privilege thing. And I see the fact that they actually do have a case. They really do have a case. Because you ask for one thing and they give you another. You're asking for, hey, I think they specifically said they wanted sperm from a white guy. And they didn't get a sperm from a white guy. They got sperm, and as you might hear me rummaging through my backpack because I'm looking for my outlet cord, so I don't you don't miss any of the brilliant shit that I'm saying right now. But they asked for this sperm from a white man, and they got it from a black dude, and that they have a case. But why did they wait? They waited 2 years after that. And then, like, so they waited 2 years after that, and now they have a problem with it. But it just almost seems like they didn't want this. They're like, I don't want this kid. And that's gonna shoot them in the foot again. That's gonna fuck them up. Like, when that kid turns 16, or when she starts to question why she has two moms and everybody else has a dad. If we're going to say, I mean, we're living in a time where, like, gay marriage is becoming more commonplace. But at the same time, if you're going to call this town that you're in homogenous and pretty much all white, then how can you be so closed-minded to actually learning about something new when this is your kid, and you say you love this kid and you bonded with. Yeah, so it says, like, they both love this kid very much, so you go to the fucking outside of your fucking comfort zone for that kid. The kid didn't ask to be here technically. And then if you want to get real conservative about it, you're not supposed to make a kid if you're a lesbian. You can't make, you know, if you want to get how most of that homogenous white, quote unquote, if you want to make a blanket statement that you're going to say the people with these intolerant attitudes, like, how do they feel about you being married to another woman? How do they feel about that marriage? But to be so short-sighted and not understand that, like, oh, so this is different and I have to change the way that I think about things because I have this kid now that's of mixed race. So I should start looking at things differently. I should start trying to step my game up as a human. This is about evolution. So I think Jennifer and Amanda need to evolve. And as it's just weird because it's almost like, there's a question of, can gay people be racist? Yeah, I think gay people can be racist, but I don't necessarily think, you know, it's like, man, can you be racist like that? Can you be like prejudiced? And I guess you can because straight people can. But it's almost like gay people should be, I think they should be more aware of the plight that other minority groups have to go through. That would be like race, that would be sexuality or whatever or any other thing that makes people different where they try to put you in a box. You should be more, God, I mean, just more socially aware. Cause as a minorities, if you're just going to say like black, brown, yellow, anything that comes under that, and under being considered to be the other and non-white, you have in America specifically, you have to know the ways of the majority in order to exist and to fully function in society. Like, there's no getting around that. And I think that's where white privilege and entitlement comes into play, because you don't have to know about other people. So it's like, oh, I don't have to know about you to survive. I'm white and I get to do this and that. And that, I think that's where we kind of come into, I think that's where the conflict is. That's where most of the frustration is, because you don't have to step outside of your comfort zone in order to understand something. Like the world's already been set up for you to succeed, you know? And that's just one of those things like that. I think oftentimes, because when you live in that bubble, there's no need or there's no reason. And there may be not, you don't really want to change. I don't think people don't want to change when they live in that bubble. And now this little baby is forcing you, is bursting that bubble and forcing you to have to live outside of your comfort zone. And I think that's an issue. I guess that white privilege bubble is more of an issue than racism is in some ways. I mean, you could argue for or against, but I just find that interesting. I mean, it's not just like this label that they tag. Oh, it's just white privilege and it's random. I think there's a lot of variables. Like, obviously the sperm bank was wrong. And they have a case. They probably should get money for that shit. But it's just weird. This woman's 36 years old and she's just so, and she's gay. It's not that that's wrong, but it's just like, you're gay and you don't understand. You're not opening yourself up to be aware of just getting your kids' hair. Like, yeah, you're going to have to, and like dads have to do that. And you always say, like, the homie Randolph Terrence always talks about, oh, if you want to get all the time when you see, like, he talks about, you have to hit him up about that. And he always talks about, you know, what he does to get his kids' hair done. He learned how to do his kid's hair. He's got a biracial kid. He learned how to do his kid's hair. Just do your kid's hair. Get some Carol's Daughter or some Just For Me and learn how to do your kid's hair. If you love this kid, you're going to go above and beyond to help this kid out or to get her whatever the fuck she needs to exist in this world, to live in this world. You're calling yourself a mother. If you wanted to be a mother, that's part of that shit. If you want to get some sperm, get some white sperm and get some money. When you get money from this case, get some white sperm and raise that kid. Like, it's an adorable, this is a picture of this kid right now. Adorable fucking kid with the big head and curly hair and everything. Cute ass kid, man. Come on. And here's another one in HD. That's an adorable fucking kid, man. Jesus. People are so... Step out of your bubbles, everybody. Come on. All right. I want to talk about... What else do I want to talk about? Some... what else? What else, you guys? Movies. I saw this movie. One of my Facebook friends posted about this movie last week called The Prep School Negro, and it's from a PBS series called America Reframed, and I'll just kind of read you the blurb. Growing up in the ghettos of Philadelphia, filmmaker Andre Robert Lee's mother struggled to support him and his sister by putting strings in the waistbands of track pants and swimsuits in a local factory. When Andre turned 14 years old, he received what his family believed to be the golden ticket, a full scholarship to attend one of the most prestigious prep schools in the country. Elite education was Andre's way up and out, but at what price? The tuition was covered, but this new world cost him and his family much more than anyone could have anticipated. In The Prep School Negro, Andre journeys back in time to revisit the events of his adolescence. He also spends time with current-day prep school students of color and their classmates to see how much has really changed inside the ivory tower. What he discovers along the way is the poignant and unapologetic truth about who really pays the consequences for yesterday's accelerated desegregation and today's racial naivete. And that kind of racial naivete kind of goes back into what I just talked about. This was a really good movie. I've always been kind of like low key, not like a low key fan, but like a low key fan of like documentaries dealing with young people and education and what that was like. I guess kind of maybe it's because of a little bit of my professional my background of like being kind of like being a teacher, like a teacher's aide in a special ed school or whatever, and teaching kids theater and stuff like that, and just being around kids in that respect and just like seeing their growth. It was really good. It made me think about me when I was a kid. Like I went to a college prep school, but it wasn't on the level that Andre Robert Lee did. So like this, I guess his school in Philly would be the equivalent of Sidwell Friends, which is an elite level school in Washington D.C. That's where Chelsea Clinton went to school, and I believe Sasha and Malia Obama, I believe that's where they go to school also. And it was just, I think the oldest graduated. But anyway, like my school, Bishop McNamara, was a college prep school, Catholic school. And that was, I mean, I thought I got a great fucking education from there. As I'm saying, like, a great fucking education over there, fucking. But I really believe it was a great school. And but just on the level where it was just, it wasn't on the level of like Sidwell Friends, even though there are a lot of kids that I went to high school with that are now doctors, lawyers, have their own business, and they're doing well. Kids that I went to college with are doctors and lawyers, and you know, they're doing great things and stuff and contributing to society. But it was interesting because I guess this guy would have been, I think he's probably like early to mid 40s now. And then back then it was obviously a different time, and just the things that these kids have to deal with. And if you see this movie, I saw it, it's on PBS, but I checked my local listings and I just did, like, I didn't know that my cable had this feature where you could just search the title. You could like type in the title and it would come up. And anyway, after the movie, they were just talking about how, you know, families need to be involved more. And that's anywhere you go to school, really. And a lot of times, like, parents are working and they don't have the time, like Andre's mom in this documentary. But like, I think it is important to, you can't just send the kid to school and then expect them to do all the work. You kind of have to be involved in the kid's life. It's like, again, like back to this, the white mom, black kid thing, where it's just like, you have to be involved in the kid's fucking life. I mean, you made it, so you should be involved in the child's life. I mean, I'm on my high horse on this one. I mean, I like to think that I consider myself, if I made a kid with somebody, with a lady, I would want to, you know, be around the kid and help him, you know, help it or help it. Help him or her. Yeah, man. Because I know when I was a kid, my school, in high school, I think the very first report card, the parents had to come to school. Like, they had to pick up the report card, and all the teachers would be in the gym, and they would have a little desk, and all the teachers would be in the gym. And you'd have to go up to the teacher with your dad, and they go over your grades, and they open up their grade book and be like, oh, he did good on this and this. I think he could do better. And like, my dad would look at me, oh, you, is that true? And you had to be like, yeah, I feel like I could do better, man. You know, I feel like I could do better on that jump. And, you know, so you have, not only do the parents have to be accountable, but you have to be accountable for what you did. And like, I've said this before on the show and in conversations with my guests, you know, like, you had your name in that. If you made the honor roll, your name was in that wooden glass case, encased in that thing, and your GPA and how much, and when you were a senior, your name would have, like, by your name would have all the schools you were accepted to, how much money, all that good stuff, man. And it was competitive. So I can only imagine how, like, these super duper advanced schools were. This sort of reminded me of comedian and writer Baratunde Thurston, who used to work for The Onion, wrote a book that was essentially a memoir called How to Be Black. And it's really good. And he talked about his life. He's like he's a couple years older than me, but he talked about his life living in DC and being one of the very few, or I think only, black kids at Sidwell Friends when he was there. And what he had to deal with. And, I think there were other black kids, but being one of very few black children at that school, and what it was like for him to be in at Harvard and everything like that. And it's really good. And I think, you know, that these two would be good companion pieces with each other. So you could either read Baratunde Thurston's How to Be Black, and then check out the Prep School Negro. There you go. A book recommendation. Wow. Wow. From me? Whoa. Whoa, Nelly. All right, so check those out. What else do I want to get into? Another movie, highly anticipated movie. I saw Gone Girl yesterday, And man, oh man, oh man, was it a good movie? It was really, really. This is a spectacular film by David Fincher. I'll read you a little blurb about it. Gone Girl is an American mystery thriller film directed by David Fincher. It was adapted by Gillian Flynn from her 2012 novel of the same name. It stars Ben Affleck, Rosamund Pike, Neil Patrick Harris, Tyler Perry, and Carrie Coon. The film had its world, blah, 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 blah. The film examines dishonesty, the media, the economy's effect on marriage, and appearances. Flynn has said that it deviates from the novel. This movie, and it's interesting because you have like the woman who wrote the novel wrote the screenplay, and you know, after I saw the film, I read little reviews and blurbs about it. And they talk about what was added, what was taken away, what and the differences between. But I think I'll just preface this by saying I messed up when I read the novel, the plot from the novel from the wiki. That's because I saw this, and I'm going to blame the fact that I did that on Entertainment Weekly, because we live in a society where we can't take the blame for any of our transgressions. And I'm no different from anybody else. And I'm going to say that I saw this amazing cover on Entertainment Weekly, and it had, you know, it was like Gone Girl, the movie of the year, or possibly some shit. And the cover was very titillating. It was the imagery was amazing. And I was like, oh shit, what is this movie? And then I looked it up and I found that it was based on a novel. Excuse me. And I read the plot and I was like, fuck. And but I'm not going to spoil anything for you guys. I'll just say that this, so having said that, even though I knew what was going to happen and I had an idea of what was going to happen, that did not take anything away from my experience of seeing this movie. It was terrific, man. Like I think David Fincher is one of the best. He's positioning himself, or he already is the best filmmaker of his generation. Like, you know, you had, and I think JL Kovan, and JL and I kind of talked about this. Just, I don't know if we've talked about this on a podcast. We might have talked about it on the last time that I did his show, but just how amazing this guy is. Like, he has a style that you kind of know it's his movie. Like the dreary, dark, foreboding, ominous tones in his films, and you know, there's something's like just around the corner, or something bad's gonna happen. It makes you really have this visceral reaction to what's gonna happen in this movie. It's really, because I knew that I was gonna see it this weekend, so Friday night I watched Zodiac, which was about the Zodiac Killer, was a 2007 film, Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, and Jake Gyllenhaal, and just to kind of get ready to see this movie. And I've been wanting to see Girl with the Dragon Tattoo again, the U.S. version that he directed. Just really good. But just back to the movie, just how this film was shot. The acting in it, like Ben Affleck was great. Rosamund Pike, my God, like she was great. Neil Patrick Harris, and shout out to Neil Pack. I don't want to give any, not going to give anything up. I'll just say Neil Patrick Harris is gay, but he's gay, but he can play straight dudes. I mean, his character on, Barney from How I Met Your Mother was over the top. Like, hey, fuck, like he's trying to like, you know, hit on women and all that, but he so I'm not gonna give anything away, but shout out to him for being gay but also being able to play a straight dude. Tyler Perry was in this movie and was not bad. he did not, you know, he did it. He played his part, and it was solid. He didn't fuck the movie up, and you know, whatever. Just a really, really good movie. So this movie is basically about a guy who, on his fifth wedding anniversary, he finds out that his wife is missing, and then the movie just kind of goes from there. And that's all I'm gonna say. Right now, God, I want to say it's probably one of the best. It's one of the best movies of the year. It's up. It's gotta be in everybody's top 10. All these bloggers, all these TV movie critics, all these nerds that I follow on the internet, on Twitter, like, it has to be. There's no way that this movie should not be in the top movies. It's really good. I would say that, and I tweeted this, what is this, I said Gone Girl is like, you know, like a spectacular film or something like that. And it's also like Lilith Fair for feminist bloggers. It's like when they see this movie, I want to know what their think pieces are about. Like, I'm excited to find out what their think pieces are going to be. But I would even say, and without giving anything else away, in this movie, you will see, you know, one of the best villains within the last few years. Like, I've always said, you know, Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight. I've said Leonardo DiCaprio in Django. What's his name? Candy in Django. And then there's a character in this movie that is right up there. This is a character that would give Walter White a run for his money. And it's very good. I saw this trailer to the Stephen Hawking biopic, and I didn't even know this was coming out. This movie called The Theory of Everything, and it's about Stephen Hawking before he was, you know, disabled and all that. I really didn't know too much about him. I just knew he was the guy that was like paralyzed or whatever and talked through a computer. And I saw this fucking movie, this trailer, and it's just looking like, it looks like it's going to be really great, but it's like, man, this guy did all of this. He was so smart, and he didn't let his disability, like, you know, restrain him. And it just made me look at it like, God, I'm lazy as fuck. And it just, you see these triumph movies and these people that just like, beat their illnesses or their disability, and they managed to do all these amazing things. Like, how dope would like Oscar Pistorius's biopic have been if he didn't murder his girlfriend? You know, all he had to do was not murder anybody, and his biopic would, I mean, his biopic would still be dope, but it just, he just wouldn't, he's just not going to be heralded as more as it's not going to be heralded because he killed his wife, his girlfriend. But this Stephen Hawking joint, man, I think he's going to be gunning. He's going to be gunning. He's going to be gunning for that trophy. So I'm all with this kid, this guy, James Marsh. And then it's him and Felicity Jones. So she plays his wife. So, yeah, man, I think that's going to be good. So this is the time. This is my favorite time of year, not because the weather, just because the weather's nice and temperate, but also because these movies where people are like really trying to get Oscars, like they're starting to come out, and that means more fun for me and more movies to see. So I'm excited about that. I want to talk a little bit about some TV, Blackish. I saw, so there's two episodes that came out with this show. There's a lot of controversy around the show. I think the title does the show a disservice, because I guess Black is just trying to say like, oh, just because they're, you know, everybody, they're, you know, they're, I guess, I don't know what is it trying to say? I think they talk about it in the pilot, just because they're upwardly mobile, an upwardly mobile black family. They lose some of their heritage and culture, so they're not completely black. They're black-ish. And that's kind of a quirky, that's quirky and goofy. But if, I think if they just called it something else, like the, because their last names are the, are Johnson. So it could have just been the Johnsons and about, and still deal with the same issues. But what gets me upset is this fake black intelligentsia that always has a problem anytime something black comes out. And it's just a show. It's actually a funny show. It's solid. It's funny. I laughed a few times while I watched the show. You know, I enjoyed myself. I was entertained. I didn't feel like they set the race back because of a 28-minute show that they're trying to compare to The Cosby Show. Not only is The Cosby Show, like, was that a black sitcom, but it's one of the best sitcoms ever created. You're going to compare this show, and that show had its growing pains a little bit. They had things that they shifted around a little bit, but that was the best, arguably. It was the Jerry Rice of television sitcoms. It was the best. And you're comparing the show two episodes out of the gate. You're trying to compare it to The Cosby Show. And that's unfair. And that's ignorant. That's short-sighted. It's like you're going to compare it's like comparing every black quarterback to Michael Vick. It's like comparing Cam Newton to Michael Vick when he's clearly closer to Ben Roethlisberger. It's fucking dumb. And there's people that haven't seen this show. I've read Facebook threads where somebody would write an article about Black-ish and they'd post it. And somebody would repost it. And then somebody would say in the thread, oh, I haven't seen this show. How is it? And then somebody would have their opinion about the show. And even the person that hadn't seen the show yet would say, oh, they're coons. They're cooning. How do you fucking know if you haven't seen it? Actually watch the show. Like, why does all this pressure? I really think the creators may have done a bit of a disservice to the show by calling it Black-ish. It could have, that's my main gripe with the show. Otherwise, it's Anthony Anderson's the lead in the show. It's about a dad trying to raise his family, trying to figure stuff out. There's a storyline where the mom in the second episode, where the mom is so excited that her daughter is coming to her with her problems. She's having her inner monologue while her daughter's explaining her problems. She doesn't even get what her kid's problem is because she was so excited that her kid was. That's funny. That's fucking funny. But does the weight of the world, like, is Marcus Garvey, is it going to make him cry if this show isn't successful? I doubt it. This is going to make his ghost cry. Jesus Christ. People put too much pressure on these shows, these black shows, and everybody has to be super skeptical. And Maranzio Vance says this all the time. Like, you don't have to support a show or something that's black just because it's black. Support it because it's good. And if you don't think the show is good, don't watch it. But I think this show is solid. It has something, man. It's just as good as The Middle. Nobody says The Middle is more a lot like fucking Good Times for white people. It really is. It's about the recession. When I watched that show, it was like, you know, they would talk about, like, how are we going to pay this bill? We got to do this. We got to da-da-da-da-da, you know? I like the shows are kind of honest about that, like about the recession. And Gone Girl talks about that stuff too. Like, it's a motivation for a lot of shit in this day and age. It's like, it's not just this perfect thing. And like, once you realize in that movie, when plot things get uncovered and you find, like, it's commenting on all these things. So there's a lot of different variables in Gone Girl. Going back to that. It's a solid show. Also, How to Get Away with Murder. I've two episodes in. I like it. I think right off the rip, it's better than Scandal. And it's another thing. I was talking to one of my friends last night. You know, black people, so they have a problem with Blackish, but Scandal, people watch Scandal. And I'm not going to shit on anybody for watching Scandal. It's fine. It's a soapy drama. It's fun. Everybody, it's good. I don't really watch the show like that, but it's fun seeing people tweeting about it and all that stuff. You know, you got a black lead, a black female lead who's flawed, and nobody's saying anything. I mean, people do talk about that, but it's good to see that, you know, like it's good to see like a flawed character. You know, she's fucking the president. And she's fucking around and she's leads this firm. And I don't know how she has time to do all this. No, I can't say that. That's fucked. That's me being closed minded. Anyway, with this character, with Kerry Washington character and Viola Davis and How to Get Away with Murder. I'm not a real fan of How to Get Away with Murder either. The title. But there's these black women that are, attractive and intelligent, and they're flawed. Who wants to see a show where somebody's perfect all the fucking time? If you want to see Viola Davis have dignity and class and just, you know, watch her in something else, watch her in her like 7 to 10 minute scene in Doubt, watch her in that that movie. What's that movie? Oh God, I hate when I do this. You guys. What's that movie with Maggie Gyllenhaal? That people shitted on, but it was good. It was about the teaching and the charter schools and all this stuff, man. Finding the movie. Never Back Down, because it's like a karate movie. Name? Shit. Won't Back Down. Okay, I was close. Won't Back Down. I see her in that. I mean, you know, like nobody wants to see like a boring ass character. Can these people be black and interesting and be complex? Jesus Christ. You would think more people would have a problem with that. But I'm looking at Viola Davis in this show, and it's like, why can they just give her all of the awards? You know, can they just give that shit to her like right now? I mean, she's great in it, and it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how stuff unfolds on that show. I'm going to stick around with that. I really like it. So that's fun. And then Survivor's Remorse, which is on Stars. It's executive produced by LeBron James, and it's basically about this guy, this basketball player that signs a new contract with a team in Atlanta, and he moves with his family, like his cousins, his agent, his sister is like around, and his uncle's around, and like it's sort of like Entourage. It's a black Entourage with basketball, basically. And that I've read a couple blurbs about the show, and I think that's probably the best description. And it's funny, and like off the rip, they talked about like Donald Sterling and beating kids. And I think this was before. I think the Ray Rice thing, probably happened right before while they were in production. But the beating kids thing, like that was a storyline. I thought that was really cool. Like they seem to be on it topically, and it was good. It's a good show. It's like a half hour show. You know, I fuck with it. Survivor's Remorse, man, on Stars. Music. I was driving a coworker home on Friday, and I don't like to have my rap music, you know, playing. So I had the Lucy Hale album, and I mentioned the Lucy Hale album, the homegirl that plays Aria from Pretty Little Liars. She has a country album, and I was listening, and I like it, man. Like I fuck with it. It's not, And I think I might have said this before. It's not a vanity project. It's just a solid album. Like, she can sing and the production's good. She could have been like, if she wasn't famous off of Pretty Little Liars, she probably could have did. She could have been in Nashville. Like, she could have been a character in one of those characters in Nashville that tried to have a career. Like, it's just as simple as that. Like, Nashville is one of my favorite shows. What's the name of this album? Let me see. Road Between is the name of the album. And I like it, man. It's just like good. It's just like solid music. And it's funny because, like, after that album went off, I had my foreign exchange album, Leave It All Behind, in the CD player. And she's like, oh, this sounds good. I like this. I was like, oh, shit. You surprised me. Look at me having preconceived notions about what one of my white coworkers thought about music. She's like, oh, I like this song. I'm trying to remember what song it was. It was one of the records off of Leave It All Behind. So that was pretty neat. So I learned something about somebody else. You know what I'm saying, guys? All right. Here we go. What else? Okay, more music. Childish Gambino released his mixtape Stone Mountain, and he had it's Stone Mountain and Kauai, the EP. I don't know how he packaged this, but it was supposed to. So initially, I thought it was just going to be first part was going to be Stone Mountain, second half Kauai. And that's essentially what he did. But like earlier, when did he do this? Wednesday, he released it. And it was just Stone Mountain. And I thought it was going to be together. But let me see what we got here. I'll just say that I really like it. I think the more I listen to this dude, man, I think he's top five right now. He's top five out of his class, out of the rappers right now, just talent wise. I think he's up there with Kendrick Lamar. I think I would say Kendrick Lamar is at the top, and then there's Childish Gambino, and then there's a couple of other guys. I don't know, you know, he's up there because every time this guy puts something out, it keeps getting better. Now on this Kauai EP, he's got Jaden Smith on a couple songs where Jaden Smith's doing this poetry stuff, and it's kind of like I get what he's doing because Jaden Smith's supposed to be like the kid that he like that Childish Gambino is the persona of in Because the Internet. I get that's what he's trying to do, whatever the fuck the storyline is. I don't really know all about what the storyline is. Just the music is dope. And it seems like he just keeps evolving and he keeps getting better. And I man, this guy, it's good. Like, I will say, like, I just wasn't a fan of, like, the poetry of the night. And, you know, we met and I saw you and you had on a Power Rangers shirt and I had one on too. And, you know, and it had the nice production in the background. That was cool. But I get what he's doing. Overall, the guy's rapping his ass off, man. And he's doing his thing. Also, I wanted to plug, I don't think I said this. So I did an interview for this website called gonzofame.com. And, Gonzo Fame is a website that interviews comedians. And, I was interviewed on there. Shout out to David Gavry for putting me on asking me to do it and interviewing me. And we talked, had a conversation and, he transcribed it and put it up on his website and you can check it out. It's got, Paul Verzey's been on there. Joe Matarese, Hannibal Buress, Doug Stanhope, Ralphie May, bunch of other comedians. And he put me on there. So that was really cool. So check that out, gonzofame.com. And you can see it. It's on my Twitter feed. It's, I've made a reposted post on Instagram, and it's on the website, so you can check that out. Also, I put a couple of clips on YouTube, two new clips. So check that out. Check out the YouTube channel. Some old jokes. I hadn't looked at that in a while. Back in the day, like, I had some joints, man. I had a couple of gems. Like, you could see, it's Elzai, one of my favorite rappers. He put out a mixtape called Witness My Growth. And so you could witness my growth on that YouTube channel, Chris Lambert Comedy. I think that is about it, everybody. So make sure you check out the dates. Check me out on Gotham Comedy Live in a couple weeks. That's going to be fun, and I will be around, and I won't see you, but I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.